NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, gentlemen. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. Good to see you. It's been a while since I've been on the show, but they keep crashing. I keep working. I'm getting tired. But I was fortunate enough to spend some time in Connecticut a week before this taping and spoke to about 150 pilots and aviators, trying to not only promote aviation safety, but of course promote the show. And we've got a lot of folks that have both watched and listened to the show. But I think we've got an interesting discussion today with regard to flight instruction accidents. But before we get to that, we do have a new sponsor. And John, you are very familiar with Piston Power, so I'm going to let you tell the audience about our new sponsor.
Well, Piston Power has been, the concept from Piston Power has been around for a while. When I worked for the airlines, it was power by the hour, where the manufacturers would charge an hourly rate to operate their engines, and all the maintenance and all the repairs would go back to the manufacturer, the cost of, including the engine going back for overhaul. We have similar programs in the business aviation community, where both repair stations and the manufacturers do a fee based upon how many hours you fly the airplane, and they'll take care of the maintenance. And this is a fairly new concept. It's been around a little while, but they moved it down into the general aviation play area. And it's one where it takes care of your airplane from beginning to end. In fact, it's not only the engine, but it's the whole airframe. It's the annual inspection. It's everything. So it smooths out the cost. You don't all of a sudden have a problem with your airplane. It's not running right, and you bring it in and find out you have to spend $80,000 for a rebuilt engine. So this would take care of that. In fact, one of the things that they just shared with us is they had an airplane that actually had a problem, an electrical shot and a fire on the airplane, and they're replacing the entire fuselage with a brand new one from the manufacturer.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it really is a good program. If you're afraid of those great big bills coming in, you know, you got to write the check out now before you get your airplane back. It's a good way to cover up and smooth out those costs.
Well, there are a lot of people down in Florida that are going to have a lot of problems with their airplanes right now after this latest hurricane. So definitely check out Piston Power. You can find the information on our website. And you'll be hearing us talk about them. And actually, we're going to have some of the folks from Piston Power on the show in the future. So great to have a new sponsor. Let's get into the show. I've been missing in action, as usual. Work is just driving me nuts right now. They keep crashing. I keep having to work. I wish we'd slow down a little bit. I did have a little bit of a respite. I was in Connecticut a week before this taping, and was fortunate enough to speak to about 150 local pilots and aviators in the general area of Connecticut And so that was, it was both entertaining. Our hosts were just fantastic people. The FAA even showed up at the presentation. So, you know, getting the message out and people know who we are. They, some of them watch the show, some of them listen to the show. So, it was nice to actually see some of the faces, behind the scenes, if you will, for those people that get to watch us. So, that was a great day. But we have another accident involving flight instruction. And I sit on the board of the National Association of Flight Instructors. And the week that we are taping this show, as a matter of fact, we were supposed to be down in Daytona Beach, Florida, at the NAFI summit, the safety summit, which it is put on by NAFI, which are flight instructor-based organization. But it was open to basically anybody that has a pilot's license. And we were going to be talking about flight instruction accidents and what was going on. Unfortunately, the hurricane kind of derailed the plan. And so now the NAFI Safety Summit is going to be rescheduled. But when we start looking at these flight instruction accidents, and we have talked about flight instruction accidents on this show over the last several years. And Todd, you found another one of these accidents involving a young flight instructor, 28 years old, and a student, 21 years old. That were performing, you know, typical flight training maneuvers in a Diamond DA-40. And it is a popular training aircraft. And again, I do not understand why flight instruct, well, I do understand the fact that these flight instructors are losing the airplane, which are resulting in loss of control and, of course, an impact with the ground that, you know, typically isn't survivable. So why don't we just get into it? Why don't you summarize the accident? Because there are a lot of problems that I have with this report, as I know both you and John have, with regard to a lack of information. So why don't we get into it and then talk about the learning lessons that aren't in this report?
Oh, gladly. The event in question took place on June 6, 2021, Darlington, Indiana, roughly about 30 miles northwest of Indianapolis. This was a flight instructor and a student in a Diamond 40, and they were doing stall training near their departure airport. And they departed from controlled flight, entered a spin, and crashed the aircraft. The investigation, and we'll get into this later, they weren't very deep as to how they got into that situation with respect to what the training syllabus was, what the history of this instructor was with this kind of training. And we had to go indirect to figure out what else is going on here. As Greg explained, there was a fairly young instructor, fairly young student, and the instructor only had a grand total of about 44 hours as a flight instructor, had just gotten their flight certificate for instructing roughly 9 weeks before this event. And this was a student pilot who had about 17 hours. So it sounds like this is a pre-solo or just post-solo young pilot. And there was no weather situations here, no mechanical issues with the aircraft, no systems issues with the aircraft. Fortunately, there's two sets of data, ADS-B data, and we have a graphic for those of you watching the show that's from ADS-B Exchange. And also there was a data card on board the aircraft. And in the public docket, the NTSB did have a short portion of the critical part of the flight where you can see, and for those of you looking at the video, this is an excerpt from that public document file, which is going to be available on the page that hosts this episode. The airplane appears to reduce engine power, does a slight nose up, and speed decreases, and we have a departure from controlled flight. It enters a stall and shortly thereafter goes into a spin to the right. And it would appear that the engine went from idle to fairly high level of RPMs. And this was also something that was relayed by a witness on the ground. They looked up and saw that the airplane was pointing downward and they heard what sounded like a significant engine noise. And they were at 4,000 feet and they spun into the ground. And that's when John and Greg and I started talking about this, thinking, one, there isn't a lot of there in this report. for us to understand what was it that got these this pilot and this instructor, student pilot instructor, into a situation where specifically this aircraft was not certified to do. The aircraft was not certified to do spins. And the instructor, although a flight instructor has to have spin, demonstrate being able to recover from a spin, looking at the records of this pilot, most of this instructor's hours, something like 312 out of 329 total hours, was in this make and model. There's no supplemental information that says whether or not there was an actual spin experience during the other 17 hours that this pilot flew. And there you have it. We have a fatal event, tragic, one where the student would not have been in a normal private pilot syllabus, being shown a spin in an actual aircraft. On top of that, this aircraft wasn't certified for a spin. So the question remains, why did this pilot get into a spin, the CFI get into a spin? We know what happened. This investigation didn't tell us why it happened. In fact, here's a probable cause. The National Transportation Safety Board determines the probable cause of this accident to be a loss of control while practicing aerodynamic stall, which resulted in a spin and impact with terrain. So I leave it to the two of you. Why is this an inadequate explanation for this accident?
Because they told me the obvious. It's obvious that the aircraft stall spun. It's obvious it hit the ground. What they didn't tell is how that airplane got into that position. You have a flight instructor with a student. The whole purpose of the flight instructor, one, is to provide instruction, provide proper instruction in policies and procedures, how to execute maneuvers and execute them properly. And if something does go awry with the student, the flight instructor is there to take control of the airplane and remedy that bad situation. We see it all the time. That's the whole purpose of a flight instructor being basically guarding controls or monitoring very closely the execution of these maneuvers, especially when you got maneuvers such as stalls or slow flight and things like that, where you have a higher risk ability or risk level for getting into an inadvertent stall spin or stall spiral. They're calling the NTSB called it a stall spin. The video that we looked at that will be available to our listeners and viewers. When you watch the video, it's only a snippet, but it's based on real data from the aircraft. You see that a lot of this is flight control, inadequate flight control discipline. The airplane, you cannot have the airplane in any kind of yaw when you stall the airplane, because a component of the spin is stall and yaw. If you take the yaw out, then the airplane will stall, but you will still have the ability to control it. It's the yaw that gets you into the spin. But like you talked about, Todd, and what is in this report is a procedure by the aircraft manufacturer that says, if you get into an inadvertent spin, here are the recovery procedures. And John, you and I have talked about this. You see it, I see it. Todd is going through flight instruction right now, but we talk about flight instructors. And I would have started this investigation looking at this flight instructor's background. I mean, she apparently went through the flight school that she is actually working at. So I would be looking at that program. I would have been talking to other flight instructors that instructed her. I would have talked to other flight instructors that knew her. I would have talked to other students that flew with her on this particular maneuver. Based on the data that's available, there wasn't a lot of oversight. Now, we don't know if the student started the maneuver and lost the aircraft and she tried to intervene and take corrective action. But again, then that brings up part two. Was she guarding the controls? Was she monitoring what was going on? Was she prepared to take control of the airplane, when it did break and roll off to the right? And why, once she probably had it, because she would have been doing the recovery, why didn't she follow the procedures that are in the flight manual. She's got better than 300 hours in this airplane. She should know this airplane inside and out, especially as a flight instructor. And she failed to follow those procedures. So when you look at all of these things, just with her as the flight instructor, none of that is discussed in the report. And again, it doesn't help the flying public. It definitely doesn't help flight instructors and students to learn lessons from an accident like this, where there could be and should be some valuable information that can be incorporated into one's own flying.
And not only the instructor and the student, but and other students and other instructors, how about other flight schools? There was clearly something going on with this flight school, whether they had an excellent program, excellent oversight, or not so excellent. Either way, whatever information that could have been gleaned from an investigation would be useful not just to the pilots and the instructors, but to other flight schools.
You know, that's the missing link that we have in investigations today. All right. So we're not, and I think it's because of the budget problems that the NTSB has, but putting that aside, there's not enough facts disclosed in these these reports that can help those people in the industry that really want to make the industry safer. You know, when you go to schools like Emory-Riddle and you talk to the people in the safety program, they dissect these reports right down to the minutia. And this would be a waste of time for those up-and-coming safety professionals coming out of a school like Emory-Riddle. It would be a waste of their time to look at this report, because there's nothing in here that they can add value to the work that they're doing. And that's the crime here. That's the big negative. And I understand the board has got budget problems. The chairman has told me that repeatedly. They've got money. This is coming up at the end of the fiscal year. It's three quarters of the year through. So they're probably watching their pennies really close, because they got to make it, stretch it out to get through the end of September. So they're squeezing as much as they can, you know, cutting the travel down, trying to stop the hours from building up. Man hours from building up on any one report, because they got to process a whole bunch of reports. So there's a lot of things coming against them at this point in time.
Yeah, but don't make excuses.
I'm making an excuse for them, but it's.
I mean, look.
We'd be better off if they didn't do anything.
Exactly.
Money for doing a decent job on another accident.
Look, you get enough physical evidence. You go out, you look at the airplane, you go, okay, there's nothing wrong with the airplane. Yeah, you may visit the flight school, but I can go back to the office, save the government money, and pick up the telephone. Why? Because every one of us has a 24-hour day. Typically, 8 hours for sleeping, 8 hours for, you know, food and everything else. And then you got 8 hours of whatever. And that whatever is typically work in a normal day. I can pick up the phone. I can make multiple phone calls and never leave the office. And if I was investigating this, I would have gotten a list of people, flight instructors and students from the flight school, who flew with this young lady, who knew this young lady, and I'd be calling them and I'd start asking them questions. And I mean, it starts there, because you really have to understand what kind of training she got when she was being trained, not only as a pilot, but apparently as a flight instructor there. What she did on her check rides, especially, I'd be talking to the DPE who gave her her check ride. I would be also looking at the fact that, hey, you know, yeah, there isn't anything wrong with the airplane, but we know, and I've seen it, and we've talked about it. There are flight instructors that don't like to do certain maneuvers. And one of the maneuvers they do not like to do are stalls. Why? Because they don't have confidence. They didn't have confidence when they were learning how to fly and having to perform the stall. And there are a lot of flight instructors out there who do not have the confidence to do a stall with a student for this very reason. But they have to do it. And if they have to do it, then they will hopefully get through it and never have to do it again. And it's obvious in this case, something went awry on this particular flight where, and apparently it was the first stall they were doing, because based on the ADS-B data, this was the first entry to this kind of maneuver. And it resulted in the aircraft rolling off on the right wing and getting into that spin entry. And you can see from the video that there is a yaw introduced as the speed comes up and then the recovery. And Todd, you referenced it at the beginning of the show. In the report, there is an excerpt from the Diamond DA40 flight manual, and it's 3.8, recovery from an unintentional spin. Power lever, idle. Well, we saw that the power was at idle because they were doing a power off stall. But when they got into the stall spin, the power went up. So there's one thing that, wasn't done properly. Ailerons neutral. Well, we don't have an aileron position, but that spin continued to to develop. You could see that the airplane was changing heading, and you can see from the video that the direction, at least looking at the visual, was changing multiple directions. Rudder, full deflection against the direction of the spin. Well, that's to neutralize or get out of that spinning or spiraling direction. So now you are heading at the ground in a high-speed descent, if you will, but at least you are not spinning or spiraling. That's when the recovery starts to take place. That's why the power needs to be at idle. That's why you gently start to introduce elevator. They're at 4,000 feet when this event happened. They're not at 1,500. They're at 4,000 feet. And she failed to follow these procedures. Had she followed the procedures, they would have initiated the recovery and probably been able to recover in 1,000 feet or less, because it would have been, bang, bang, bang. The question is, how do you lose the airplane this bad and spin for 4,000 feet all the way into the ground? And, and again, you're heading to the ground. Basic logic says, I don't want to hit the ground any harder than I have to, so pull the power back. Why? I want to slow down. Oh, by the way, if I'm speeding towards the Earth, we've all been taught, start throwing drag devices out. Well, what's your drag device? Dump the flaps. Who cares if you overspeed them if you're trying to slow this airplane down? None of that took place. But it should have never got there, because soon as that airplane rolled off on the right wing, power off, neutral rudder, neutral ailerons, and rudder in the direction opposite to rotation. Those are the basic principles of stall or of spin recovery. It applies to every airplane. Doesn't matter whether it's a 727 or 727. That's a I was just looking at a 727 for a different reason, but you look at a 787, doesn't matter. You look at a J3 Cub, doesn't matter. The fact is that the spin recovery is the same. And why she didn't follow it is the big concern. She's a flight instructor. If you really look at the dates of all of this, COVID, we were coming off COVID.
Right.
So a lot of these flight schools had shut down or had scaled back a lot of their flight training, and that may be. She was just getting back into it as they were starting to ramp up operation. This particular flight school, if I'm not mistaken, is affiliated with an airline training program, or at least a pathway program. So again, as that flight training requirement started to ramp up, they started churning through these pilot mills, these pilots getting them back in the airplane and back in the air. The problem is that, I don't care. She held a flight instructor certificate. She knew what the procedures were to recover from a spin. She had to demonstrate it probably a couple of times through her flight training, especially as a flight instructor. And the procedures are very clear in the DA40 manual. This is what you do. And when you watch the recovery, she did not do any of them.
Another place I usually look for additional information when I think the report is somewhat inadequate, I look at the NTSB 6120 form, the basic accident incident reporting form. Sometimes there's pretty decent stuff in the narrative that sheds light as to what's happening. Well, I looked at this one, and the under the description of damage and other property, that was the most well-written part of this whole thing. Aircraft was completely destroyed with a small debris field. We have a picture for on the video version of this that shows you what they're talking about. All right. Next section is a narrative history of flight. Nothing. Next section after that, recommendation. Nothing. After that, additional information toward the bottom. Nothing. There's nothing in this report. There is a potential to have all kinds of things, even in this one document, and it's not there.
And I know for a fact this is not the first accident that particular flight school has had. If I was an investigator, I'd be looking back. One of the things you got to do as an investigator is do a look back to see if there's a trend developing. Is there a problem? Is this an isolated event with a flight instructor, or is there a trend developing? And there's none of that in this report. This was one of those, you know, let's collect enough stuff, throw it in the report, write it off to the obvious of, well, pilot lost control. Again, you never have to leave the office to write a report like this. So you're saving the government a heck of a lot of money with a report like this. Why? Because you don't need to leave the office. It's the obvious. And it's frustrating, because the whole purpose and mission of the NTSB is to develop all the facts, conditions, and circumstances, do a thorough and methodical investigation, and present them with a logical conclusion from which we can all learn. You're not going to learn anything from this other than, okay, she didn't follow procedures. But there is a reason for that. Well, this report does not spell out any of that. And oh, by the way, what was the student like? I mean, they got, apparently from what you said, Todd, he's a 17-hour student pilot. Is it one of those fearful students who, you know, always has a death grip on the controls? Were they fighting the controls? Were they fighting each other? I mean, again, that takes interviewing people that knew these two folks, could give you or at least shed some light on their respective character and characteristics and that kind of stuff. None of that is in this report. And that's what being an investigator is all about.
And that's what the NTSB is supposed to be all about.
Yeah.
And I mean, they had 14 months from the time of the accident to the publication of the report. This is the result of 14 months of whatever work and effort they did put into this.
Yeah, it wasn't much effort. And it's just sad because, again, we are now going through a period of time where flight training is at its peak again because of the airline hiring boom. Even though some of the airlines have scaled back, there's still a lot of flight training going on. There is a lot of lessons to be learned. And like you said, Todd, not only for individuals, a flight instructor or a student, but for flight schools. Where are the lessons learned? Do I need to have more oversight? Do I need to be doing, prog checks or, you know, some sort of proficiency check of these flight instructors who have been off for a month or two before I turn them loose? Do I run them through a bit of a flight? Okay, we're going to go through these maneuvers just to make sure that, yes, they can still do them. Yes, they are competent. And of course, again, we've talked about this in the past, the airman certification standards, or the old PTS, the FAA says you have to demonstrate a mastery, not proficiency, not knowledge, but a mastery of the maneuvers. Well, guess what? If you've been off for a month or two, you got to go out there and demonstrate that you can still master those maneuvers. And I mean, there are so many lessons that could have been learned from this particular accident. Unfortunately, we had two people perish in this accident with a very simplistic report where, you know, unless you are dissecting it like we are and listening to what we're bringing out, you know, they've died in vain because there is nothing useful to the industry. It's a very small segment that's going to hear this report.
Yep, it's a tragedy.
Well,
nothing to be gained. Nothing to be gained.
And I know that just digressing, we've dissected several accidents over the past several weeks. We had two serious accidents that we dissected, and we got some email traffic. And again, the whole purpose of this show in dissecting these reports is trying to go beyond the obvious. And of course, there was some critical emails on these serious accidents that we had dissected. And they basically said, oh, you guys are idiots, man. It was the fact that the pilots failed to monitor speed and they crashed the airplane because they stall spun or flew it into the trees. That's the obvious. What we were trying to bring out with those accidents, as well as the other accidents that we dissect, are going beyond the obvious, the backstories, that is, the questions that need to be asked and answered, like this report, talking about this flight instructor. How did that flight instructor allow this situation to go from bad to worse and not be able to take corrective action in 4,000 feet to remedy this bad situation? It's obvious that the airplane crashed. It's obvious that there was a loss of control. Why? And the whole premise of accident investigation is very simple. You ask why questions until you run out of why questions, and you go to the sources that can give you answers to all those why questions. It is not linear. You're going to be all over the map trying to find people or find evidence that will answer those why questions. It's not just speed management on the Cirrus or failed to monitor speed or got the airplane. I got that. That's obvious. The question is, why did the pilot or pilots allow that airplane to get into that situation? So it's very frustrating to see these types of accidents, or even the ones we've dissected in the past, and not have all the answers, or at least ask the questions, may not get the answers. But there are lessons to be learned from every single accident.
And I think this segues into the second to last word I've been mulling over the last couple of minutes. That is, we've dissected this accident and perhaps the lack of real input into what happened. But it doesn't have to stop at the NTSB. If you're a person who is involved in a flight training program as an instructor, as a student, heck, even as a manager, this might be an opportunity for you to ask yourself, how does my organization deal with a situation that could lead to this? Are we doing things in a way that meets or exceeds the industry standards when it comes to ensuring that our instructors and our students and our aircraft come back safe and sound off of every flight? And it's going to be different for every organization, but it has to start somewhere. And I hope for some of you, this show is that beginning.
And with that, John, we will leave you with the last word.
And unfortunately, these last words weren't to help this particular flight, but there's a lot of them that we find that fall right into the category of doing an adequate pre-planning on your flight, checking the weather here, there, and everywhere in between, doing a good pre-flight. I'm getting ready to do a show for the Wings program for maintenance people, and I'm going to be raising that issue with all these repair stations. They should be making sure that the pilots that pick up those airplanes know how to do a pre-flight. If we started to do it, you know, we are our brother's keeper in aviation. That's one of the things that's made us what we are today, is we do take care of one another. It's time that maybe the pilots and mechanics start getting back together and doing a good pre-flight. Get a mechanic to tell you what they should be looking at on their particular airplane. I know we've gotten feedback from airline people, and I talk to airline crew members often about what constitutes a good pre-flight. And we've actually, Greg, in fact, you got the email. One of them actually said that he changed the way he did his pre-flight based upon conversations with us.
Yep.
So, I mean, it really needs to be done. So good pre-flight, in and out of the airplane, and then when you get in the air, put that head on the swivel, because there's still a lot of airplanes in the air and a lot of young, or not so young, but new pilots flying around out there, and you don't want to get involved with any mishaps that they're going to be engaged in.
John, let me just interrupt you real quick, because part of your pre-flight speech should involve, in this particular instance with flight instructors, you know, you're going to brief with the pilot, the student pilot that you're going to be flying with. That briefing has to be done in the pre-flight setting. Okay, this is what we're going to do today. We're going to go out. We're going to go to the practice area. We're going to be doing stalls. We're going to be doing slow flight, doing whatever. But you need to go through the recovery procedures. Okay, I want you to recite to me what the stall procedures are going to be as far as getting into it and then getting out of it. How are you going to recover? If you get into an inadvertent spin, what are the spin recovery procedures? Going through that before you ever get in the airplane at least implants that into both pilots' heads. not just the student, but also the flight instructor. It brings it to the forefront. It brings it to RAM memory rather than parking it on the hard drive. So now you've got it fresh in your head. So now you take off. Now you go to the practice area. And if you do get into an inadvertent spin like this, you've already briefed what the recovery procedures are. So it should be then basically rote reaction to initiate the recovery. That is part of this pre-flight. You don't just go out there, kick the tires, light the fire, and say, the airplane's good, let's roll.
Well, very true, very true. You know, ironically, the three of us are all NAFI members, and we all read the books, and we all go to the seminars with them, and they have the information. It's just not being implemented.
Yeah. Well, and again, and the FAA provides a lot of great information through the airplane flying handbook, through, and they just published the new instrument flying handbook. I mean, it's incumbent upon pilots to take that self-initiative to go out there and research and read and stay up with it and review their manual and review procedures to refresh their memory. You don't just learn it and forget it, and I'll deal with it when it happens or when I encounter it. That's too late. In the heart of, you know, the fire of the situation, like a stall spin, you don't have to try and figure, okay, what, man, I forgot what that manual says. That's too late. You got to have it up front. And that's why, I mean, being a pilot means being responsible, staying ahead of the curve, staying ahead of the aircraft, even before you get in the aircraft. So, John, I know that you preach it all the time about pre-flight, but pre-flight just goes beyond, you know, looking to make sure the airplane's okay. You got to pre-flight yourself. And if you're a flight instructor, pre-flight the student as well.
Oh, true.
So, gentlemen, with that, I will bid us adieu and look forward to seeing you guys on the next show of Flight Safety Detectives.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that. And we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.